I want to beg a personal indulgence. I am fixing to introduce to you my brother, Bill Jobe. And the personal indulgence is, you've always heard, send me flowers before the funeral. And I'm not sure that I'm going to get to speak at my brother's funeral. In fact, he's probably going to outlive me because he's just got more sense than I've got. So I want to say to you folks this morning what I would say to those folks at that funeral. This is a man who understood when people said, love your neighbor as yourself. When he heard that read from a book, when he heard that taught in his Sunday school classes, he said, that's something I think I can do. I think I can love my neighbor as myself. He is one of the kindest, most generous, most loving, second funniest person in our family. He truly is a wonderful, wonderful human being. And as a personal indulgence to me, although you don't know him, would you all just express your appreciation to him for being here?
Well, that was just mean. Make your heart stand up and talk. Thank you for having me here. Y'all have a wonderful fellowship here. I looked at your website. You have a wonderful website. I looked at that yesterday. Your webmaster's doing a great job. But when Pat sent me an email to come speak for 6 minutes, he sent me about 12 questions. It would have taken me 2 minutes to read the questions, but so I've really narrowed this down. I've taken the advice of a Mexican minister told me, breve. So I'm going to try to keep this brief. Pat and I, when we were growing up, had a dollar a week allowance for most of what I can remember in our childhood. I remember that we sort of quantitated things by the 45 single record. Cost a dollar. 100 pieces of bubble gum cost a dollar. That's how we grasp the value of anything. If we heard the price of something, we'd weigh that value based on the number of records or the number of pieces of bubble gum. So if we heard that a car cost $1,000, that was 100,000 pieces of bubble gum and, you know, 1,000 records. So if I remember correctly, back then, you could get into a Saturday matinee for a dollar and get a box of popcorn and a candy and a Coke. I remember when I started working, I could get lunch of 2 hot dogs, a bottle of Coke, a cream-filled oatmeal cookie for a dollar. If I had bought a 45, I could have listened to it for hours. Lunch was gone in 20 minutes. And or less. And a movie lasted about 2 hours. This was Joe Boy Economics 101. When I was 11, I started working, making $15 a week. And I still got my dollar a week allowance. I was rolling in money. I worked 45 hours a week to make $15. I've lost my spot, sorry. I was rolling money. Sometimes I'd buy my lunch, even though I could have gone home and eaten for free. And a movie didn't feel complete without popcorn and a Coke. Weighing against bubblegum, it seemed like the right decision. I don't know what inspired me, but when I got paid, I would often put $5 in savings. I'd spend $5 on a tool that I didn't have, and I would keep $5 to spend. I think I ate most of the $5 I kept to spend, which contributed to me being 5 feet tall and 3 feet around at that age. Sometimes at the end of the week, I would have money left over, and I'd put that in savings too. Our parents didn't discuss money around us much that I remember, but for some reason, I was aware that we were almost always on the edge of running out of money. When I was 12, we needed a new roof on the house. Daddy came to me with a proposition. he would have to pay the bank about 6% interest. I had $200 in savings, and I was getting about 2 or 3% interest. He said he offered to borrow the money from me and pay me the higher interest. This planted a seed in me that I didn't ever want to be in debt. The other thing that at this age that convinced me that debt was a bad idea was my job. I was working for our dad in a furniture store and on rental property. The furniture store was kind of like one of these rent-to-own stores. Many of the patrons were mill workers, and they would come in and ask, "How much is it a week?" I don't ever remember anyone mentioning the interest rate or how much it would cost, the total cost would be. But I do vividly remember going back to those people's houses to repossess their furniture and appliances when there was a slowdown at the mill or some other unexpected calamity hit their family. I have been blessed with a job, a place to live, a supportive family. I am often reminded that I am among a privileged class, but this can be dangerous too. When Corey and I got married, we had to set our own boundaries for debt. The banks were willing to loan us twice as much as we thought we could afford to buy a home. We decided we could have a nicer home or we could have another child. Because we decided on the child. Because of that decision, we were able not only to have that child, but to also educate her to the master's level without any student debt, to own our home, and to eventually buy a house that we now rent to her. It's not quite paid for yet. We are also able to weather the storm of expense of extended illnesses, support our church and other nonprofits. One of the things that I've always said about money is there is someone out there that is living on less than what you live on, and what you make, on what you make. If we can live on less than what we make, it gives us the freedom to help our children, our friends, our church, our community, and not have to worry about someone coming to take our stuff or our home just because we hit a bump in life. Thank you.
Before I get into my prepared text, I have to tell you that I've sought a lot of feedback on this sermon this morning, and Ed Prue said, well, you're only talking to two of the four money types that exist in society. There are four different kinds, and he didn't tell me what they were. But when I told him I was going to talk about how to worry less about money, he said only two groups of people worry about money at all. He said, you're not even going to be talking to the other two. So if you find that this sermon means absolutely nothing to you today, come back next Sunday and let me try again. Also, I was standing with a very wealthy man. I was standing beside a man I happen to know is very wealthy. And a young man walked up to me and he said, rich people are stingy. And I said, no, they're not. I said, some rich people are stingy and some rich people are very generous. Some poor people are stingy and some poor people are very generous. And the wealthy man standing next to me said, and that drives me absolutely crazy. The reason that it drives him crazy is he is one of the generous ones. And not only does he give generously, but he encourages other people to give generously. And when he does, he's often frustrated by their stinginess. This is a quote from John Armstrong's book, How to Worry Less About Money. Ultimately, one is cultivating an art, one of the minor political arts, the art of domestic finance. By saying that is an art, one is getting at the idea that there are multiple motives and rewards which are integrated. There is an aesthetic or order, a physical beauty that is connected to neatness and clarity. Like the beauty of the periodic table, or the elegance of a mathematical equation, or the rightness of a note in a sonata. It is a classical beauty. I asked my brother to come here and talk today about his relationship with money because, frankly, I think he's better at it than I am. I could be wrong about that. Maybe the chaos I have lived through in 2 divorces, 3 business failures, and being fired from 4 jobs has taught me a great deal about money and life and love. We'll see how things turn out. But as you listen to Bill talk, I hope you got a sense that he has a balance around money, valuing money, saving money, even giving money to causes that he believes in. That's the best hope I can give you about anything. Balance. Be balanced. If you feel yourself getting out of balance, especially around emotions, stop. Check yourself. Ask yourself what the lesson is here, or ask yourself what the lesson might be from your childhood. Most of us don't get emotional about things, be it money or sex or control or career or relationships or whatever. We don't get emotional unless we are carrying an emotional charge from childhood. Now listen to me. I love it when the evangelical preachers say, "Are you listening to me?" We don't get upset. We don't get emotional about anything unless we are carrying a charge from childhood. You can open a can of sardines around one person, and that person will say, "Yum, you got any soda crackers?" But you can open that same can of sardines around somebody else, and they'll run from the room screaming and tearing their hair out. It doesn't have anything to do with the sardines. It's about the person. It's about their emotional charge. The same is far, far more true about money. Money is one of the most emotionally charged issues in our culture. I've been looking at the work of one of my teachers, Leonard Orr, around the issue of money. Leonard says the reason to have money is so that you don't have to worry about not having money. He also says money will not make you happy. He says a person with $10 million is no happier than a person with $9 million. Now that's a joke. And it's a pretty good one, but here's the truth. You can be miserable with $10 million. I've lost my place too. You can be miserable with $10 million, and you can be happy with the average salaries of a public school teacher, a cop, a doctor, a lawyer, or the Social Security income of a retired textile worker. Here's one of the keys. Don't let your relationship with money define either your happiness or your misery. Decide today, right here, right now, in this sacred place, in this sacred moment, not to let your money define your joy, your pleasure, your dreams, your relationships, or anything about your emotional well-being. Decide today to simply be emotionally well, no matter what happens. What? You all know that I'm a fanatical fan of Byron Katie. Her work can be found at thework.com. If you'll ask me about it, I'll give you that website after the service. We are who we are, and reality is what it is, regardless of what we think about it or how we feel about it. Consider your relationship with money. Do you worry about it? Are you afraid of running out? Are you scared the whole economic system is going to collapse and you need guns to protect you from starving people who are going to break into your house and steal your food? Or are you fairly confident that come what may, you're going to have enough to eat, a place to sleep, and maybe even a little scratch to get you into a friendly poker game? Guess what? None of those thoughts or feelings changes your bank balance one bit. Go ahead, pull out your smartphone, check your bank balance. Whether you have $5 in your bank or $5 million, what you think or feel about it right this second does not change the numbers one bit. They are what they are. Children get this so easily. Byron Katie's key question is, who would you be without that thought? Who would you be without that thought? You think you're poor and barely getting by? Just about 50 bucks from being flat busted broke? On the street and begging for your next meal? Who would you be without that thought? Who would you be without that thought? Or what about this thought? You've got 50 bucks in the bank, a job, gas in the tank, food in the kitchen, and the rent's paid. Who knows? Maybe things are going your way. Who would you be without that thought? You would be just as nice as you were before you thought either one of those thoughts. Just as healthy, just as kind, just as good a friend or parent or child. I did this process one afternoon with an 8-year-old in this congregation. He said he was mad as fire about a certain situation in his life. I said, who would you be without that thought? He sat there for a second and he said, I would be a happy, contented child. Genius. The light bulb went off. He got it. Children are geniuses. Childhood can often be a hard place to be a genius, but most of the kids in this congregation are incredibly wise and sensitive and brilliant. The 8-year-old boy instantly got that he could let go of his anger, his frustration, and his anxiety by simply acknowledging that he would not be any less a wonderful human being, happy and contented, as soon as he let go of the thought that was making him angry, frustrated, and anxious. Byron Katie says you don't even have to let go of the thought. Just question it. Just question it. If you have worries, fears, heartaches around your money, question them. How bad is it? I remember Meg Barnhouse talking about money once in a sermon. She said, so many people come to the end of their lives and say, money isn't important. And Meg said, what about all those times before they get to the end of their lives? Here's a thought. It isn't about the money. It's almost never about the money. I used to be married twice. One of my wives would do anything she wanted to do, but if she didn't want to do it, we couldn't afford it. Go see the Grateful Dead in concert, hire a babysitter, put gas in the car, eat dinner on the way, no problem. Go see the Country Gentleman. Do you realize how much it costs for a babysitter and dinner, and we'd have to buy gas to get there and pay for the tickets? We can't afford it. It's never about the money. Money is a means to an end. It opens some doors, it fills some gas tanks, it hires some babysitters, but money is not what life is about. Life is about being yourself, being loving and caring, having fun, living in the moment, living in the present moment. Life is about taking deep breaths and feeling deep gratitude and joy. Give it a try. Feel the gratitude. Feel the joy. You can do that on 10 bucks and you can do it on 10 million bucks. You can also fail miserably at all of that on 10 bucks or 10 million bucks. There are many good books you can read, seminars you can take, CDs you can listen to. But once you've read all the books and taken all the seminars and listened to all the CDs, what you will ultimately find is life is about the simplest things. Kindness, love, joy, peace, freedom, authenticity, being authentically yourself and not letting the turkeys get you down. I do not make light of your fears, your worries, your anxiety, your anger. They feel very real and daunting and irritating. But I would simply ask you to question them. How real is your safety right this second? Your health, your freedom. The roof's not leaking. The floor doesn't have any holes in it. There actually is a little bit of a problem at the door right outside the women's room, but we will fix that. I know some of you have been through some terrible times of loss and fear and insecurity, but right this second, you're here. We got you covered. Nobody is coming through that back door trying to haul you out of here and throw you into debtor's prison. If you think your sky is falling, I would simply join Byron Katie in asking you, who would you be without that thought? Remember, you cannot be afraid if you are not thinking fearful thoughts. You cannot be anxious without thinking anxious thoughts. You cannot have fear and anxiety around money without thinking fearful and anxious thoughts around money. Your thoughts are the keys to your being a happy and contented child. If you'd like me to, I'll introduce you to an 8-year-old who can explain it even better than I did. May the blessings of 1,000 angels be with you now and always.